I've worked with Michael for years, but I've never seen him in an uncontrolled environment. I've never heard him speak, you see. But tonight, so many possibilities exist.
My name is Jamie Roberts.
I'm Robert Lendrum.
And this is the Running Scared Podcast,
where we review the films that had you running away, but coming back for more.
We are coming back for more tonight, Rob. We are coming back for not one, not two, but three films.
Three scoops of raisins, buddy.
Tonight, we are going to be reviewing the Halloween trilogy, the David Gordon Green films, the ones that were just finished, 2018 to 2022. Pretty excited to do this. We were thinking about if we were going to take Halloween Ends, Halloween Kills, Halloween in separate reviews. And then you just came to the table and said, fuck it, man. Let's just review all three together. So we were like, how might this look? Who cares how it looks? Let's just do it and let's just figure it out. So we put together a good structure and we're gonna get this done.
Yeah. I know you're a huge Halloween fan, so I know you were looking forward to this, and you were looking forward to each of these movies as they came out. You would genuinely get excited. We often tried to hook up and go to see a movie together, which we never fucking were able to do, but it didn't help that I moved away.
Exactly. We can meet in Cornwall.
I'll take that. That's way past the middle for you.
You know what? And I think I'm a huge Halloween franchise fan. I'm a huge Friday the 13th fan. I was really excited about these films. This is not a reboot. This is a direct sequel from the first one. So consider these three films, Halloween, Halloween Kills, and Halloween Ends, as direct sequels from the first movie. And the story is told such. I was just excited for it because Blumhouse was the studio that got a hold of it after the Dimension film rights expired. So Miramax grabbed them and then got Jason Blum on board. They got John Carpenter on board to be mm-hmm. part of this. You know, he's said in numerous interviews, Blum, that if he wanted to make it, he wanted to make it with the original creator, the input. And they absolutely did that. And he was directly involved in all these three films, and I love the character. It's an iconic, iconic, iconic character. In fact, I'd probably argue that Myers is really the apex predator now of all these sort of classic slasher, these slasher guys. What do you think?
Oh, I mean, that's because he's current again, right? I mean, Jason and Freddy have not been around for years now. Michael's he's back up there again. But is he? I mean,
yeah, okay, exactly. We're going to kind of interrogate these three movies for what they are, for what they were, for what they could have been. And I think,
how does it come together as a trilogy? Like, how do these stories come together? And before we go there, James, let's think about why did you think, because this is not actually the first time that Halloween tried to reboot itself, right? Weren't the Rob Zombie films kind of reboots?
Yeah, we had the two Rob Zombie films. We've had different directors try to get this series back on the rails, if not through a reboot, if through a sequel, with Busta Rhymes jumping in and H2O and fucking Josh Hartnett.
Right, you say on the rails. So did it go off the rails? So how about we think of some of the top five bad moments in the Halloween franchise?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah, we'll kind of set the table here, right? So I don't want to start from a deficit perspective. I want to
you mean that fucking rubric again? Okay, let's hear it.
I think one of the things, if we look at all the Halloween movies that have been made, still, even though some people like it, what the fuck was going on with Halloween 3, Season of the Witch? Why was that movie even made, right?
Is that a classic Hollywood, just slap the label on a different movie and see if people buy it?
I guess. That one still.
But Carpenter's involved with that, right? He's not out of it, is he? I think he's still involved with that movie.
Oh, I got to double check. I think he is, but it's just, why change something, especially with the success of Halloween 1 and then Halloween 2 with that original sequel, the continuation on of that first night, mm-hmm. where Myers comes back to kill Laurie. But anyways, that's my first, that's my first sort of disappointment from the entire franchise was season of The Witch.
Yeah. Next one from there for me has got to be how Michael's mask just keeps getting shittier looking and shittier. Like, it starts off pretty frightening, and we've all heard the story. It's the Captain Kirk mask that was spray painted and the hair was adjusted.
Yeah.
But then, like, by season, like, what is it, the third movie or fourth? I guess it's the fourth movie.
It's the fourth one, yeah.
It just looks like an expressionless man, but like there's not even like wrinkles on the face anymore. Like, it has no features. It's
very,
like, a bag on his head.
It's very like Phantom of the Opera.
That is a good point.
It's very smooth. It feels very 19th century French Enlightenment. Like it's like got the pursed lips. Anybody in the franchise knows. It's like ridiculous. It doesn't even look scary. Okay. And they made the eye holes. They made the eye holes like really small. And then I don't know what the hell, what was going on in H2O when they decided to put the film at a private school in California. And Michael's mask is like, it's like the eye holes are so big. You can see the actor playing Michael Myers is like an 18-year-old boy. Like, the hair is like not working. It's like Matthew Lillard should be in that. It doesn't even look scary. His hands are not, like, you got to think, this is a few movies in. Like, this guy should be grizzled a little bit, right? Like, he's been shot 18 times. Fucking looks like he's 21. Like, you know.
He's been hit over the head with how many shovels by this point?
But you know what? That was just, honestly, that was just like a layer cake of making it digestible for that like preteen teen audience.
Yeah, right? They were kind of going for that, yeah, Scream audience.
For
right?
Sure, for sure, man. That was like Can't Hardly Wait, you know what I mean, with Michael Myers in it. Like, it was so bad. And just like, but just everybody, please go back and watch that. It was terrible. Anyways.
Well, HDO might have been bad. Halloween 6 was not so great either. The Curse of Michael Myers. The cult seems – is the cult the same cult from the third movie, the Witch movie? And then Paul Rudd is the hero of this movie? This might be like one of Paul Rudd's first movies, by the way. I didn't check, but I'm assuming. It just wasn't a strong one. I don't know. The cult thing is actually the thing I was most disappointed by. Paul Rudd's great. I mean, I'll take Paul Rudd in most movies any day, but – that cult thing really kind of throws me off, and like trying to tie Michael to this like supernatural kind of always, well, it puts him back in like the Jason kind of realm, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we'll talk about that in these new movies, but he is sort of this embodiment of pure evil, but this cult that worships him, I don't know. Okay, let's move on.
Yeah, exactly. Like the cult. I feel like in horror, that's low hanging fruit. And like, at what point in our Jogcast writing are we gonna put a cult
pretty,
in
pretty
there?
Soon, actually.
Yeah. All right. A good point. Bad point is Busta Rhymes kills Myers by electrocuting his groin region.
Trick or treat, motherfucker.
Yeah, they actually got the mask a little better. You know, that was. You know, just like any franchise, you fall victim to trends of the time, right? And that whole found footage when that movie was made, you know, on the heels of Blair Witch and VHS, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Well, reality television.
Yeah, reality television, right? Just like that whole idea. What, Rob, what do you think is the number one kind of low point in this big old franchise?
So it's a low point for a bunch of reasons, but Laurie coming back in Resurrection only to be killed again, because this is the second time she dies in the...
Oh, is this when she falls out the window, right?
Well, she falls off the building when she goes to take off Michael's mask and he's hanging upside down. Like, he's like it's like the classic, like, Ewoks have captured Han Solo thing. And
yeah, it's just a dead animal, Chewie.
And then he just grabs her and throws her over the edge and they fall. But Michael's hanging on with like two fingers on one hand and hanging her off the edge. And then she reaches up and – oh, she's been stabbed now. And then she reaches up and kisses him. Before she falls and dies. Why does she kiss him? Because it's her brother or whatever?
Yeah. I feel like that question is better left unanswered. We may broach that topic later on as we get to Halloween Ends with, you know what I mean, the bloody fingertips and, you know, the symbolism of that moment. But I don't know. Like, would you want to kiss your sister if your brother?
Also, if they're also murderers, who's trying to kill you? Like,
pure evil. So... Yeah. Those are our top five funny kind of low points of the franchise. And you know what? Another low point coming is the one line challenge for me, Rob. So I think we got to we gotta try this. Now this is gonna be a little bit tricky because normally we just take a look at one movie and we fuck it up. So now we are.
Well, we should explain it again. We should be better at explaining what the one line challenge is because we've started doing this at the end of the one line challenge. But let's put it before this time. The one line challenge is meant to be a way to summarize the plot of the movie so that me and Jamie don't have to summarize it for you. We think that like that's not necessarily great potting, and we don't think we're that great at that. So this is our way of sort of like saying, here's what this story is about before we book club it throughout the rest of the podcast. The problem is me and Jamie don't pre-write these. The whole point of this is to try to do it right off the top of your head without planning. And we try to summarize the movie grammatically in one sentence, which is also a struggle we've had. Yes, now we're going to try to jam three movies into one line.
Yeah, that's true.
I think we have to go pretty general on this one, James. So let's see how you do it.
For sure. Are you going to count me in?
Oh. I thought you were just ready to go.
No, okay. There's a routine, man. I'm like a routine guy.
One, two, three.
Halloween. Halloween kills. Halloween ends. Michael Myers escapes once again 40 years after the original killings to embark on an evening terror and desolation against his hometown community and hometown friends.
Friends.
Only to be met by his biological soulmate, who in the end sees him off. Halloween. Halloween kills. This is not easy.
That was good. I think up until you got to soulmate, because she's not his biological one in this. They didn't verify that this time, did they?
No, they're biological. It was, you know, they had Michael and they had Laurie, but then gave her up adoption, moved away. Like there was something along those lines where, you know, they mentioned in one of the films, but there's, you
in
know.
These ones? I don't remember that, because that's from the original series, the original franchise. They eventually.
No, but from the original movie, right?
Yeah. I don't think
they definitely mentioned this in one of the films. If not, please write us an email and just let us know, because it's 6 hours.
I think you're right in like the old franchise, but not in this current one. I don't think Laurie is supposed to be biologically related to Michael.
Well, that remains to be seen, but there's clearly a connection there at some point. So anyways.
There is.
That is okay. Okay, here we go. Three.
Yep, get me in.
Three, two, one.
Halloween. Halloween kills and Halloween ends. Psycho serial killer Michael Myers escapes prison years after an original crime spree, returning him to his hometown where he attacks his ancient and original rival. But this time, she's ready. Halloween kills. I mean, Halloween kills and Halloween ends. That's it. I'm reading vague.
That was actually really good. That was really good because you put in you put in a really, really important plot point where that she's ready.
And so I think that's the difference with these films, right?
Okay. All right. So listen, the way that we're going to attack, no pun intended, this podcast is we're going to take a look at Halloween. We're going to discuss some of the things that we liked about it, some of the things that jumped out at us. Talk about Halloween kills, and then we'll talk about Halloween ends. Then I think we'll take a look at some other segments that hopefully tie it all together. But Rob, here we go. Let's start off with 2018 Halloween. Rob, this is the sequel to the original film, and
right.
This is, I think, in my opinion, this is the highlight of the trilogy. This is a fresh perspective. This is a fresh take. This was David Gordon Green taking on this franchise and really trying to reinvigorate the soul and the fear of Michael Myers and the character. So what we get is a movie that falls looks and feels very similar to the original film, where we've got a killer who's in prison in a psychiatric facility, is able to break away and then goes on a killing spree. And then really this all culminates to 25 minutes at the end where this is going to take place at Laurie's house. And there's a big ensuing battle that takes place there. But I want you to jump in here because you mentioned that in your, just even your one line challenge this time, Rob, she's ready.
Yeah. So Laurie is like, you know, Rambo. She's been training. She's been running laps. She's like shooting guns, throwing knives. She's got Michael Myers masks set up on, you know, glass jugs and she's shooting them. She's fucking catching bow and arrows out of midair and then loading them up and shooting them again. Like, yeah. So she's become a totally different character. Laurie is no longer the coy but intelligent babysitter. She has trained her whole life to prepare herself for what she believes is the inevitable escape of Michael Myers. Now, Jamie, I got to ask you if you think it's a good idea to let a podcast team enter a prison, get personal one-on-one time with a serial psychopathic killer who doesn't speak to anyone, and let him stand in a square that you're not allowed to enter, and you're going to pull out the mask that he wore on the night that he killed a whole bunch of people and then just yell at him a whole bunch while everyone else in the prison is going bananas. Dogs are barking. Storms are building in the sky. People are like – everything in the world is saying, stop. This is a bad idea. Don't do this.
Yeah, and even the podcast host at one point looks over to the doctor just before he's about to pull up the mask and gives him this side-eyed look. And the doctor, who we can talk about later, he just looks over and just kind of nods his head like, I'm nodding my head right now. Like, go ahead.
Yeah, like, this is cool.
Go ahead, man. Let's just fucking rile him up. He's like pulling a major pain. Like,
you'll get no sympathy from me. You want sympathy? Look in the dictionary between shit and syphilis.
Talk. It's like, settle the fuck down, okay?
This is how you get an interview?
Like, this is America, dude. This ain't Britain. We don't yell at people everybody.
I don't even understand why this guy's here. Like, you're here to get an interview with a killer. Instead, you just fucking bark at him.
So it's funny. They frame it like they're investigative, like, researchers, you know, and then she just, like, you know, very sheepishly says later, we have a podcast. We're doing a podcast with podcast team. Anyways, so clearly, I don't know, like, I don't know if anybody has come up to you right into your ear and started screaming, but like, that'd probably agitate you. Like, I know, like, it would definitely agitate me. I don't even like it when anybody touches my head, let alone screaming in my ear. So clearly, like, he turns. So he's connected to that mask. And he's very upset. Michael Myers is very upset at the situation. So I'm going to come back and ask you. So this is, like you just said, this guy spends his time chained to a fucking cement block in the middle of a courtyard. Robbie's got a yellow line painted around where he's allowed to walk. Now, if you were going to transport him, would you just transport him on a regular bus, two to a seat?
School bus.
School bus, two to a seat.
Seatbelts, everyone! Please let this be a normal field trip. With a friend? No way!
Cruising on down Main Street, you're relaxed and feeling good. Damn. Next thing that you know, you'll see it.
Alligator. With the doctor, you know what I mean? Like, rent a cop in the front seat. No, Rob, you probably wouldn't do that, because what happens is he is able to, and I actually have a theory that he had help in order to break out of, you know, the bus, but in parallel fashion to the original one, where he's able to sort of, he breaks out of that ambulance. This, he breaks out of the bus. Now, Rob, have you seen the movie Con Air?
The bunny back in the box.
Of course. Nick Cage, man. Shoot him in the arm, doesn't even flinch.
Rob, it's the biggest thing in this movie. Like, you know what I mean? Everything about this film, there's a sense of realism, especially in a lot of like the camera footage, like especially when the podcast host and hostess, they get it at the gas station. And then you see Michael Myers walking in the background, and just like the camera work is slick. I just wish some of the, like the story itself wouldn't be so, you know, would just be a little bit more realistic. Like you would fucking Con Air that shit, man. He would have the Lecter mask.
Yeah,
on.
Yeah, I was gonna say Hannibal Lecter. This
like,
guy.
Put this guy in a refrigerator trolley. You know what I mean? Like get you know, like
yeah,
like, you know what I mean. Do yourself or give yourself the best opportunity to fucking save the people. Because here's one thing, Rob. The entire first responder unit in Haddonfield needs to be fired, and they need to rehire everybody because they're all incompetent, as we'll see later on in the series. But anyways, he's able to escape, and then clearly he makes his way back to Haddonfield, and then he just starts a killing spree. But there's a couple of really spooky moments in that, or should we talk or introduce Laurie's daughter and granddaughter, because they're kind of key figures, right?
Yeah. So in this movie, Laurie is ostracized from her family because she's kind of burdened her daughter Laurie. Her daughter Karen.
Correct.
She's overburdened. She's Karen. Yeah, played by Judy Greer. She's overburdened her with this like fear that Michael Myers will come back one day and will, you know, ruin their life, and so she, in her early life, had been training her these survivalist like missions. I don't know what the hell they do.
Fucking jujitsu, yeah. Bomb explosive training.
Yeah, like
her whole property is mined.
Yeah, exactly. So this kid grew up like this, and eventually got taken away by child services, and you know, then grew up on her own and had her own life. And she's sort of rejected the teachings of her mother. Of course, her mom comes knocking on her door. He's fucking back. So the whole movie is about like Laurie Strode trying to like reconnect, but of course the daughter not believing her and feeling like she's let herself go completely nuts, that her obsession has taken over. But it does beg a certain question, which I think slowly unravels over the trilogy, is that did Laurie create this boogeyman a little bit? In the sense that she helped, mythologize him with some of her decisions in life. But yes, we bring in the daughter and then the granddaughter, who now as a team are going to face Michael, which I don't know. Are we going to jump right to the end? Like what happens in the middle of this movie, Jamie? Because this is one of my problems with this movie. I don't remember a lot of it.
Okay,
I didn't find it that amazing.
No,
memorable.
Here's the thing, right? I think that maybe that's a good thing that, you know, you're not remembering parts of the middle, because I feel like the storytelling and the filmmaking is quite smooth. Essentially, Michael makes his way back to Haddonfield. This is a story where he's a one stepper.
He's a habitual line stepper.
You know, he's a one step ahead of the police, who are fucking always like behind. Like, and also the black cop with the sheriff's hat. Can somebody explain to me what the fuck this guy does? Other than just like, honestly, like just like, you know, he is absolutely useless. He does nothing. He's second. He's got a second foot to the ball on every challenge.
And it's the end for Ronaldo. It's a second yellow.
And then you got the old geezer.
Patton, who plays Officer
Patton, yeah.
Plays Officer like, Hawkins.
Then in the last movie, Laurie sees him in the grocery store. He's basically in a walker. He's eight. It's been 3 years. He's age 30.
I think it's five, by the way. It's a gap of 5 years, isn't it?
Whatever it is, man. But anyways, so parts in the movie is basically Michael going on a killing spree, and Laurie's granddaughter, Allison, is, you know, with that other guy, with a boyfriend and with other friends, and they're out on Halloween night just like kids would be, although I'm not sure how many 16, 17-year-olds on a Halloween night. They're out at a party. You know, one of her friends is babysitting just like the original film, and she gets pegged off by Jason. The boyfriend is there with helping the babysitting. She gets pegged off. One interesting part in the first film that is worth note before we climax to kind of the end there is when Allison is riding in the police car, because I guess they're – you know, it's become all frantic, and they're riding with the cop, and they're riding with the doctor, they hit Myers with a car. The cop is going to finish him off, and the doctor fucking stabs him in the neck. Mm-hmm. And one of the quotes that was actually, this was foreshadowed quite nicely. He said, "I want to know what he feels. I want to know how he thinks." And this guy is supposed to be like the new Loomis. You know, he also mentioned that he was property of the state. He wasn't to be harmed. So my theory is that Myers actually got help in the bus accident.
From this doctor.
From the doctor to escape. Mm-hmm. Because I think a predilection is that, or a proclivity is that he wanted to see him in action. Mm-hmm. He wanted to see him he wanted to see the animal in the wild. And when the animal was about to be harmed, when he was in a compromised state, he defended him, which is crazy because fucking Loomis would be turning over his grave. Mm-hmm. Because Loomis had spent all that time with him, you know what I mean? All that, and you know, had, you know, in the original sequels, right? Loomis doesn't necessarily exist here because you've got that new doctor. But I thought that was an interesting plot point that they inserted in.
Yeah. So this guy was studied under Loomis, and yeah. So maybe he never got to see. He wasn't there when it first happened, so he didn't get to see Michael Myers.
The obsessive scientist, right, or the obsessive doctor?
It's, yeah. There are the other spooky part I thought was pretty cool. I thought was a slight departure from what I'm used to with Michael Myers is in the bathroom killing scene with the podcasters. He's already killed one of the mechanics in the garage.
Yes.
So when he gets to her stall and knocks on her stall and she's like, "Excuse me, I'm, you know, dropping a deuce here." He reaches over and you see his hand all covered in blood and you're like, "Oh shit, what's he trying to do? He's going to knock down the door or whatever." Instead, he opens his hand and all the teeth of the garage guy fall out and hit the floor. Totally creepy. And I actually really enjoyed it. But at the same time, I thought to myself, that's not very usual for Michael Myers. That's not his MO. Like, he doesn't usually.
Well, he can become. Here's the thing.
He doesn't always make trophies, though. In this one, there is another moment where he does create a trophy, right?
He can be. Well, I wouldn't say that. You know, when he does trophetize. Is that a word? Mm-hmm. His killings, because you know, in the original, he would put the sheets over the kills, like, you know what I mean. He likes to.
He sure likes to hang them on the wall. That's for sure.
Yeah, he likes to make like a wax museum. He loves the stab in the door, right?
Like he likes to stab someone like 2 feet off the ground. He loves doing that.
But here's the thing. What's the lesson learned? Don't fucking scream in somebody's goddamn face, man. Like, you know what I mean? You're gonna get it.
But like, Michael also loves to bash people's heads into things. That like 3 times in this movie.
This is another thing where I kind of vacillate from. Does this guy have superhuman strength, or can he be injured?
They insinuate that he has beyond human strength. And this is where they get, this is more in the sequel where they start the mythologizing of him as a creature of pure evil who might have some sort of supernatural abilities. Yeah. And this is the delicate walk of Halloween that it's always done is like, they never quite cross the line into the Jason Voorhees territory where he's back from the dead and he possesses supernatural powers, but he is so powerful that it seems to go without, like, it can't be real. It can't be possible that this guy is just a human. So
yeah. Well, you did mention, actually, one thing you did talk about was that Michael Myers clearly can now teleport in these films.
It seems like, well, he seems like he could do that in the old films too, but yeah, like he's definitely. So,
well, there was one really good scene right at, you're nearing the end of the film where kind of like the lovable loser of Allison trying to get with her. She's not having any of it, man. And he's like, he's all hammered and he's in the backyard where the lights are going on and off. And the lights are on and then you see Myers, like they're in like a courtyard and Myers is looking at him and he's like, "Hey man, hey bro, it's cool, man. Like, have you ever had anybody like you?" And then the lights go out. They're like massive floodlights, like deer hunting lights. And then they come up again and he's like, "Hey, where'd you go, man? Oh, bro, your vibe's off a bit, man. Like you're," and Myers has gotten a lot closer. And then the lights go out again. And then when they come up again, he's swinging at him to stab him, and then he clearly kills him and impales him on the wrought iron spike. But it's like
another trophy.
Yeah. Well, yes. Here's the thing. We culminate to the end of this movie where there's a showdown in Laurie's house, and there's been some creepy killings, and Myers has just been MO. The story has not deviated from what works. You know, he is escaped. He goes on a killing spree and he's trying to find Laurie to kill her. They end up at her house, which she's turned into a fortress with actually a couple of traps. Mm-hmm. And what happens, you know?
There, it's a long scene, too.
It is a long scene.
We're in there for like 25 minutes in this safe house.
Well, like, there's exactly. This is a safe house and there's tension. You know what I mean? They... do you want to go? Do you want to take it?
Well, just like, let's detail a few things. There's a fist fight. Like there's a very personal fight between him and her at one point.
The stepdad, the dad, he gets killed.
Oh, he gets immediately.
Immediately. Never go. Oh God. Never just go walking out. You know what I mean? don't be the tough guy. You know what I mean? Don't be walking out because you just leave yourself so vulnerable to attack. And that's what happens to him. Like, yeah. I think he goes looking in the police car like, hey, what's that? And then he fucking gets it.
Yeah. This is the thing that I don't like about this movie, Jamie, before we get to that showdown.
Rob. No, it's been all positive vibes, bro.
Yeah, but I got to tell you, there's not a single character that matters in this movie except for Lori, her daughter, and her granddaughter. Everyone else is just cannon fodder. And they try to get you to like them with one scene so that they can kill them in the second scene. And I don't know if that one scene is ever quite enough to make you go, oh, not that guy. I wanted him to stay alive. Or I don't care enough about any of these people. And there's a bunch of them. There's a babysitter. There's the podcasters. There's the kids. There's the teenagers. There's the cops. Like, none of them do I ever get. Yeah. And then even the doctor, like, such short. They have one little piece that they add to the movie for like 1 second and then they're done. Like, nobody has any sustained effect on this movie.
I'm not sure that So what you're saying is that really Laurie and Michael are front and center in these films.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
but the disappointment for me is the doctor, especially. You're going to create a guy. I don't think
we're supposed to like him. I'm not.
No. I know we don't like him, but the fact that you're going to add that wrinkle where this guy is like going to help him get free and all that. Of course, he's going to get got because he's too zealous, but. It's almost like, wow, you added this whole subplot of a psychopathic doctor and then he's out too. He's fucking dead too.
Yeah. Well, oh, okay. So we don't love a lot of the character development. I don't feel invested with the characters. Mm-hmm. I'll be honest with you. At this point of the film, they've spent time developing the daughter and the granddaughter. I'm not sure I feel much affinity to those two characters either. Yeah. I'm not sure I'm not sure I love the casting. One thing I did find actually that I did like about it was the idea that your mother is trying to shield you from sort of like a family secret. And, mm-hmm. and as you get older, you're interested in your heritage. I know personally for myself, I went to Scotland when I was 21 and you want to explore your family past. You get interested on where you come from. Allison clearly shows that.
You went to war with the McDougals.
Exactly.
They took our eye. Now we'll take their castle.
Brothers and sisters are natural enemies, like Englishmen and Scots, or Welshmen and Scots, or Japanese and Scots, or Scots and other Scots. Damn Scots! They ruined Scotland!
You Scots sure are a contentious people.
You just made an enemy for life!
I worked in a bar and the guy, my manager's name was Mr. Scott. Like, fucking, you can't even write that any better, but it was so true. Anyways, she wants to know her grandmother. She's got a connection with her grandmother and her mother is trying to kind of mm-hmm. drive a wedge. But the three generations of Strode come together to defeat Myers in the final battle. And in a really tense scene, Myers is able to uncover the island, right? That if you move the island in the kitchen, there's like a trap, there's like a mm-hmm. secret staircase that goes down to the basement. And like, there's all like, she's got like military grade fucking weapons down there. She's got food for 16 years. Like, she's got everything, right? And they're able to trap him down there. And then how do they get him? They light a match and it fucking blows the house up.
Well, they burn the house. It doesn't blow up immediately. Well, it's a long fire because he's down there looking up at them. He's in hell, right? He's trapped. He's caged down there. He's looking up at them. There's fire. Yeah. And you get this impression of like, this is the moment where they sent Michael to hell.
Yeah. I wanted to see like a Die Hard 2 explosion. Like,
right. But then you can't have a sequel or else it makes the sequel way more harder to like buy into if you're like, wait, didn't that house explode?
Well,
it caught fire.
Oh, fuck. This This whole trilogy had some difficulty transitioning from the first to the second film anyway, so maybe they could have exploded the house and just started fresh. But
on that note, are we ready to move to the second film?
I think so, man. That was so some of the things that I liked about the first film, man, they got the mask and they got the vibe. They got the vibe check right on Myers. Like, he, first off, they make the mask more just the mask. They made it more distressed. You know, like distressed jeans. Like, they make his mask.
He should wear distressed jeans.
He looks really good. And also, and you should just, I'm going to go tweet out a mask comparison from H20 to this one. His eyes are black. And that's just going to reinforce the idea that he is pure evil. You don't see any iris retina. You don't see anything. They also give us a little, they give us a little taste, eh, Rob? They give us a little taste of what he looks like without a mask. You never get a full frontal, but you kind of get like, you kind of get the side view. He's clearly older. He's got like gray stubble. And then you get that look, but you never get the full face. So for me, that was a big win, man. They got the look right. He looks terrifying in that film. And I actually love the pacing of it. I know you said a lot in the middle doesn't really stick with you, but I thought the pacing of it was good. I wasn't bored in that film, and I thought it was just fresh.
There's a similarity in structure to the original. And
very, very similar, yeah. They paralleled each other.
But unlike the original, where I complained that it just dragged on with the peekaboo scenes, Michael's actually killing people in this one.
Yeah, so, and he's got a lot more screen time, right?
Like, he's building like that, to that big end scene, that final battle in that house with Laurie and the Strodes. But this time you actually get some kills along the way that happen a little quicker. There's a little more action, a little more plot movement, whereas I think there was kind of a dead spot for about 40 minutes in the original Halloween.
Okay.
All right, let's move on to Halloween Kills, because like the original Halloween movie, Halloween 2 followed on the exact same night. It was a sequel that literally picked up minutes later. Halloween Kills does the same thing here.
Yes.
2018, moving on to 2021. This movie takes place immediately after the first one.
I thought that was actually really, really clever that they did that. Where they've got the, I don't know, like one of the first scenes, she's riding in the back of the truck. She's, you know, mm-hmm. Myers is still like burning. She's in the back of the truck and she's going, let him burn.
Yeah, because the fire trucks are heading to the house and she doesn't want them to put
like,
it out.
Exactly. You get the fire marshals there and they're going. And
But the thing with this movie, James, it doesn't start right there. It actually starts with a bunch of flashback scenes. And this kind of tells the story of that cop, of Officer Hawkins, and how he also feels implicated with Michael because he missed the opportunity to kill him years ago. Instead, he chose to arrest him when he should have shot. Well, he feels like now he should have shot him, but didn't know that at the time. This flashback scene to me, though, is so weird. And I got
me too.
I mean, I think they tried to get clever and they're using footage from the old movies. They're cobbling in old footage and shooting it with new stuff. But these flashback actors to me are like TV, it's like watching a soap opera version of it. Like, the acting is so brutal in these scenes.
Hey, Lonnie.
There's the kid scene, which I'm trying to remember. Did that actually happen in Halloween 2? Like, I think there's some little plays like that where they've dug up an old scene and kind of repositioned it. I thought that was kind of interesting. But it does kind of call upon those prequel rules that we've talked about before, where for some reason these remakes feel this obligation to find these old characters like Tommy and insert them into the new movie as if they matter to us.
Yeah, you know what? And that's one of the things that I think is kind of a misstep, is that propensity to bring in, like you just said, all those old characters. But here's the thing. I didn't give a fuck about them in the first movie. So, like, you know what I mean? That idea of legacy characters was absolutely front and center. And that's not an original idea. And I think that there had been instances before where you want to bring in those characters to somehow, I don't know, connect to the old fans. Mm-hmm. Like, I kind of think it's lazy storytelling.
Star Wars does it all the time.
Okay, so yeah, we can even move out of the horror genre. But I think it's like a little bit lazy storytelling, right? Just because you're going to bring in someone who was in one of the originals, and then you just use that as sort of a clever plot point in there.
Yeah, but see, that's the thing. I actually don't think it's lazy. It's actually challenging. And I think it's like, it's actually really hard to do it in a way that's effective and useful. A lot, like usually these things are just fan service.
Well, lazy when it doesn't pay off. And I didn't get any payoff from that because these characters don't go anywhere.
Well, Tommy does. Tommy is now a new antagonist in the film. So like he does become something more than he was.
I suppose he's like, well, me and you had sort of different ideas of this film, but there's a flashback that that shows us how Officer Hawkins, yeah. Thank you. When he was attempting to kill Michael Myers originally 40 years earlier on that night, he actually killed his partner. And then we learned that there was a cover up from another police officer that, clearly shielded him from any punishment. And then we fast forward to the film and Michael Myers, clearly he escapes the fire. He's able to mow down 20 firefighters outside of Laurie's house. And then he goes on
how are you going to breeze over that?
Well, I don't want to. I was waiting until you jumped in. That is absolutely the most ridiculous thing. First off, I think the director fell in love with the iconic imagery that it presented. And I think he needed to make that scene, or he had an idea of what that scene was going to be, but just reality had left his mind while he was shooting it. Because there's no, Rob, I don't want to swear, but there's no fucking way that he is taking out all those firefighters. First off, these guys are supposed to be like a brotherhood, man. They would be jumping, like they would be all coming. Nobody goes one at a time. What is with this whole one at a time fighting style?
Kung Fu movie.
I know, eh? And those are highly pressurized hoses, man.
I know.
It's going to knock them down, okay? If this guy can get like, they go at him with saws and chainsaws.
I did love the chainsaw getting pushed back into the guy's head. That was pretty
brutal. No, it makes for some awesome kills. It makes for some wicked kills, but it's just not like, it's not realistic in any way.
That death count gets high really quickly in this movie.
Oh yeah. Like they, what was it? I think you said and messaged me like this guy's a one man, like tornado. This guy's a one man, infirmary.
he's like a force of nature because the ER is getting packed.
A one man ER packer.
Yeah. Cause we keep going back to the hospital. And we keep seeing people pouring in this guy's legs been cut off. Like, people are just coming in cause they're all fucked up all because of the shit that Michael's causing in this one night.
Yeah.
And but like, it gets to the point where it's wild. Like it's packed.
It's body parts. Just like body parts, especially in the fire in the front of the house, body parts just around, right?
And so this is where Tommy, I don't know why, I guess it starts at the bar, but Tommy eventually leads his gang of friends, thugs.
No, but you got to talk about the speech.
Yeah.
You got to talk about the speech. So Tommy was the boy that Laurie was babysitting in the original film. Mm-hmm. Now, apparently he's been holding a 40-year vendetta against Michael Myers. And every year they hold I wouldn't say a celebration, but like a celebration of life, maybe not life, but just some kind of,
because they survived
at this bar where some of the surviving members of that night come together and they all like get drunk and then they all kind of do this thing. Now, okay. At that point, I was sort of with the film. But what ends up happening is because of the bus accident earlier and because that there were not just Myers that was released into like the public, there ends up being other mentally ill patients that are not recaptured. And what ends up happening is one of the patients is mistaken for Michael Myers as he jumps into a car because he's just afraid, right? Like this guy is clearly mentally ill and he's looking for some support and some help. So he tries to get into a car and these guys are all in the bar and all of a sudden in that bar, everybody's like, it's fucking Myers. So we got to go out. Now at that point, this film absolutely for me, Rob, goes off the fucking hinges. Okay. It goes off the absolute rails. For me, it makes absolutely no goddamn sense from that point. Because what happens, and really what the whole film ends up being about, is Tommy leading a vigilante mob throughout the streets of Haddonfield to chase down Michael Myers. But in reality, the person that they're actually on the physical trail with is a mentally sick man who eventually ends up killing himself because he is chased into a hospital. There's an angry mm-hmm. throng of people chasing him
to the top floor.
To the top floor, and he's had enough, and then
he's got nowhere to go.
He's got nowhere to go, so he jumps off and kills himself, and then everybody's just standing there looking like, oh. That's yeah. Bob Myers.
When he splats the ground, they're like, ew.
Okay. At one point, like, it's so ridiculous. He's led this angry gang of people they're all culminating on hospital because clearly, as you said, he's a force of nature. Everybody's there. It's like been injured or dead. And everybody's like, parents are freaking out. They're looking for their kids or their fire. You know what I mean? And then Tommy's like, they're going, fuck, where the fuck is this guy? Ah! And then he goes to the sheriff. Sheriff, what's going on? And then the sheriff just looks around this old guy and goes, what? Evil dies tonight. Ah!
Michael Myers will be executed tonight. Evil dies tonight.
Evil dies tonight.
Evil dies tonight.
Evil dies tonight. Evil dies
tonight. It's like,
yeah, this is the chant that they all start.
Oh,
like,
and then get behind. Now they're chanting.
Yeah.
Now they're chanting, evil dies tonight. And they are chasing this person through this hospital. People are yelling, no, it's not the right person. But like, it's the whole mob mentality. So Rob, but I want you to chime in and then I'm going to give you my theory.
You're going
on
hard here. Like, give me some space.
Yeah, go. Grab some speed. Grab some splotchy.
So you hate this. And I hear that loud
clear. Oh, I hate it. Hate it.
I have to say, I kind of enjoyed this hard left this movie took because I was like, where the fuck is this movie going? Because now we've got this mob in the hospital. And this mob scene, like you said, it's so over the top. They cut back to it, back and forth between other murder scenes because Michael's not at the hospital. He's somewhere else.
No, exactly.
He's fucking killing other people. So they're cutting between these other kills where Michael's off killing some of the old cast, by the way, which is great. And then they keep cutting back to the hospital. And in the hospital, we've got people running down hallways. They're like elbowing each other and pushing each other to the ground. They're like trampling each other. Lori, who's barely in the middle of the movie, because she's sitting there in a merge, like getting patched up. And then she's sitting in a room, just like sitting there next to the cop and reminiscing. She doesn't do much in this movie until the end scene. And so she occasionally is. She's in the hallways and she's fucking punching doctors in the nuts and throwing them out of the way. And like, it just gets out of control, right? And she's trying to stop people, but she's not really in the movie. And so you're kind of, it all becomes about Tommy. And then Michael does come to the hospital and he starts fucking killing people. The way he kills the nurse, by the way, is amazing. When I say the nurse, I should say the woman who's dressed as a nurse for Halloween. She's like sexy nurse.
Yeah.
He pushes her gun as she tries to shoot him up into her own jaw and blows her face off. This is where the movie starts getting pretty dumb and the kills start getting crazier. And you're like, oh shit, now I know where we're going. Yeah. We're going to crazy town. Like this whole movie is just going all over the top. Michael does another one of his body trophies in this movie, by the way. But this is some serious like first year art school bullshit. Like when you compare it to Hannibal, this guy just like, he just likes to like sit people next to each other and make it look like they are talking or something, but they're dead. You know, remember Hannibal when he would make a Christmas tree of dead bodies that TV show?
Oh, is that the one that Corey did?
Yeah, our buddy Corey Augustin worked as an editor on that film or on that TV
Corey?
Show.
We got to have you on the show, man. I feel like when they were making this film, they realized that the plot was so dumb. They needed to kind of, you know, they needed to go crazy or go overboard.
Yeah, up the slasherness.
You know, like
it's kind of like what's our guy, our director that we loved on Malignant. Like,
James Wan,
Go nuts. Like, just start pushing it. Like, Aquaman was so dumb. It just kept getting dumber and dumber and dumber in crazier ways that you were like, I don't know where this movie's going. And that's kind of what this movie's doing. It's like, let's just keep upping the volume a little bit more. It gets so wild.
I wish that they, and you mentioned that they cut between the kills and they cut between this vigilante mob. And that for me is a big difference between the first movie and the second movie is that in the first movie, they would cut to the crime scene, always like investigating where it was more like a mystery, right? It was more like a murder kind of mystery. And this is not like that. So I find that I was trying to figure out what was wrong with this. So Rob, here's my take. And I think this is going to be a controversial take, but Halloween Kills was way different than what people expected and didn't like it, because Halloween Kills is a fucking Western movie.
Yeah.
Halloween Kills is the first horror Western. Or maybe Nope is, but here's my case, Rob. This is the thing that I think drew people away, is that you can interpret aspects of this film through like a social narrative and a social conscience, like almost elevated horror, not really what, you know, some aspects of it. And that's not really what the horror franchise is. But in a Western, you got good guys and you got bad guys. And Tommy and other characters in this film, because you're right, Laurie and Michael are largely relegated to the sidelines for like large portions mm-hmm. of this film. They're fucking passengers in their own car, right? I don't get it. So you got bad guys and good guys. You got Haddonfield. This is a Midwest location. You know what I mean? It's not Sioux City, but it's close. You have a final standoff in Myers' house, right? You still have the idea of the final standoff that spills onto the street, and the idea of like the OK Corral. You got Myers in the middle and you got all these guys. The lights are on. And then you have, in a Western film, there was always an air of lawlessness in mm-hmm. the region, right? Like the banditos.
Yeah, chaos.
Like just incompetent sheriffs, Rob.
Yeah, because it's all about reinstating order when chaos exactly. is taken over.
And there's no order in this film. This is not the first time that they've tried to do this in the Halloween franchise. In Halloween 4 or 5, when Myers was found, you know, this is the one with Jamie Lloyd, Myers was at a school and there was all these like drunks in a bar and they all got in there like, you know what I mean? They're 4x4s with their deer lights on it and like these dudes, and then they went and hunted down Myers. So the what pissed me off more about this movie is it's not even an original idea. It was completely ridiculous. And here's the thing, is that they get through the hospital, and Myers eventually goes to his childhood home where one of the surviving members, Lonnie, and his son, I guess, are going in to finish the job. Well, what happens to them, right?
Yeah.
Like, fuck's sakes. Like, it's just so...
Why would you let your teenage son just hang outside while you go hand-to-hand, one-on-one in a dark house with a psycho
killer?
Like,
he's like, stay in the car. Let me do it. Let me do it, son. I'm like, if it was Charles, he would be in fucking Idaho, man. Like, he would not be anywhere near.
Yeah, wouldn't even take that fight on.
No.
You know, actually, here's the one thing about this movie, though. One of the only characters that you start to get to know before they die and actually maybe build some bond with is Big John and Little John, who live
in
Michael Myers' house. And it's the first gay couple I'm aware of in a Halloween movie. But what I found interesting was, like, we get a lot of scenes with these guys before they die.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. I actually like those guys.
Yeah, like, you actually learn about who they are, their relationship a little bit. It's almost like a funny writer's thing where, like, the writer couldn't decide a name and he just called one guy Big John and one guy Little John. But it kind of makes sense, because then it works as like this playful thing that they can do when they're kind of playing Marco Polo as they, like, creep John around Doe. Their house, yeah. trying to see if Michael's in the house. They're trying to figure out where he is. So they keep saying Big John, Little John, Big John, Little John, and they're calling each other until they hear, you know, something's wrong. And I thought it was a little weird, actually, that Little John got taken out so easily, because he's kind of ripped. He's got a more, like, aggressive tone to him and style. And I thought,
you're talking about the dark haired guy, right?
Yeah, because the other guy's a comedian from Mad TV, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I kind of thought he was going to put up more of a fight. No, anyway, I also thought Tommy was going to put up more of a fight, because when we get to that gang fight near the end of the movie where Michael takes on the whole fucking city, Tommy tries to take one swing at him. I don't think he even lands it. And then Michael just, like, grabs his arm and stabs him and he's done. I'm like, that's it? Tommy had this whole movie to be the antagonist, to be like the big showdown with Michael. He's got all his buddies. And instead, Michael just gets him with one kung fu move and then the whole thing's over. Michael takes out the whole fucking crew of vigilantes.
The worst was when the worst one, Michael was slashing Achilles' tendons.
Ooh. Oh yeah, that was cool.
Can you imagine that? And it's almost as bad as when the daughter gets, like, she's like Pearl, and she's stabbing the pitchfork, little stab with the pitchfork, and then she, like, this is a guy that is like,
yeah,
like, this guy can resist like a TNT explosion.
You just tried to burn this guy alive like a couple hours ago. You stick a pitchfork in his back.
And then she throws it away aggressively.
And she takes it out, throws it 10 feet away from herself. I'm like, why would you disarm yourself? Okay. If you're going to take it out of his back, that's one thing. But fucking keep it handy for another shot if you need it.
Rob, I knew there was a reason we did these reviews.
I watched that and I was like, no, you do not throw away the pitchfork. Anyway, so how does Halloween Kills end, Jamie? I can't even remember now. Tell me.
Halloween Kills ends. They are beating the shit out of this guy. And then eventually there's like, I don't know, there's like Laurie's doing like an overdub monologue and Michael is fighting back and he's killing them all. He is able to like, Rob, they had like 70 people. Okay. Like this is the thing. This is like, it doesn't make any sense. So like when Jason would be, you know what I mean? Like he'd be running down the street and like, it would take him like 30 seconds. Or like, you know, it would take him 30 seconds, but he was somewhere in 2 seconds. Like, it doesn't make any sense. He is able to, he essentially kills everybody.
Yeah.
So then there's he does a really good job of like some iconic scenes of like him picking up the mask and putting it back on. And then Allison's receiving attention at Myers's house, and Myers clearly is able to fucking negotiate his way through the police line, the non-existent fucking police line that's there. Like, it's a crime scene.
I love the sheriff, let the mob go, by the way. I know I'm kicking back a little bit, but didn't the sheriff at one point was like, they were like, what? Aren't you the law of this town? Or I forget what they say.
There's no law. Evil dies tonight.
Yeah.
It's like, what? I've been in this town forever. It's like, oh my God. Anyways, he lets them all go. And then Myers eventually is back in the house and he stabs Karen. And at the same time, Laurie's, you know, she's in her hospital room and she's gazing out the window. And that's how the movie ends. So.
Well, yeah. So Karen gets got, which, by the way, a really undramatic way for her to die. I don't know if I saw it coming, but at the same time, it's like, I don't know if we bonded enough with her to care. But we do know that this is going to affect Laurie because.
Of course, yeah.
This is Laurie's daughter. So they know at this point they're doing a trilogy. They know they're doing
another one. This movie.
This is Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, this movie. Yeah, exactly. This movie was like, this movie was a miss, dude. This movie was not good. I didn't care about any kind of social ideas between The Evil Dies Tonight and how that coincided with, you know, Capitol riots and the Jan 6. Like, for me, I wasn't looking that deep down the glass, okay? Or into the glass. I just thought that, I didn't think that there was much of a movie there, to be honest with you. You know, the big plot idea was the fact that you had those legacy characters coming back, and I wasn't a huge fan of it.
See, I differ with you on this one. As much as you liked the first one, and I see it's like a kind of a solid, it's like a solid 7 at a restaurant where you're like, yeah, that wasn't bad. Was it like amazing?
It's filling. It's meatloaf. It's filling. There's a good potato, but it's not.
Well, there's nothing wrong with it. So, you know, it's a solid service was okay. Good movie. But this one, as much as I don't know if it's a good movie, it definitely sticks in my memory a lot easier. Like I found myself more entertained actually. And in a way where like at times I thought, well, this is dumb. But at the same time, I thought, well, this just keeps going. And I don't know where it's going always all the time. I start to feel that we're stepping away from what Halloween movies used to be with this movie.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
And I don't know if that's a good or bad thing, though. And this one, I'm sort of like riding the line. In the third movie, they really step away, Jamie. Let's get to Halloween Ends.
When you say they really step away, they fucking step off the boat. Like, they really are trying to reimagine what the story is, what the story means, and really like how the story ends. I'm just not sure that it was, in fact, I could probably, and I will argue that this is not the ending that people not even have wanted, but even would have imagined and envisioned for the fans of the franchise to see it culminate into something that completes it, that wraps up the package. Rob, in this film.
Yeah, but does that presuppose that you know what you want already? And I think that's always the struggle with these movies where you're taking on an old franchise and you're trying to reinvigorate it. If you just give the fans what they want, don't you feel like you're going to end up with like an okay 6 or 7 kind of movie?
Rob, I just, you know what? Like, do you fucking go to a Motley Crue concert to hear them play new shit off their 2023 fucking record? No, dude. No, there's a reason why people are still packing out RFK, man. Play the fucking hits. No, I'm serious. Like,
yeah.
So
it's not much room for growth, though.
Rob, who cares about growth? There is this is not like, this is not The English Patient, okay?
Is that supposed to be like an art movie or something? English Patient. Ah, yes. The pinnacle of movie making.
No, I'm being facetious, but I think what I'm saying is, you know, we have different, like, you're like an art student, like a film.
Yeah, so I'm always looking for the opportunity.
You know what I mean? Like I worked in a printing company before I was a teacher. I worked in a factory. I think that the franchise has such a strong foundation. Okay. It's the foundational elements of the spirit and the themes of the story. And I think that if you're willing and you're able to work within the parameters and the borders that have been set up, then I think you can really do a great movie. Like Halloween, even though you thought it was a 7 out of 10 Meatloaf, that film reinvigorated the spirit of the franchise and just had some really great kills and just was what a Halloween film is and what should be. I think, and Green.
But in Halloween Ends, does that spirit not extend?
Well, here's the thing.
Okay. New people.
Oh yeah. Well, that's the thing, right? Like he said that Green, the director, he said that people will interpret it, interpret it different ways. And he's been very kind of like, he's doubled down on his idea being like, I never in my mind did I think it was going to be like a final battle between Laurie and Michael. And I'm not sure you need to make a movie like particularly just like that, but you know, it's easy for me to critique. I just think that the direction that he took it in was absolutely, you know, I think it was a bit clumsy and pretty hard to do and very ambitious to do in the final film of a trilogy nonetheless. So essentially, and I'll give you the 30-second mix here, is what ends up happening in Halloween Ends is Michael Myers from the beating that he took from the 70 vigilantes has been in like fucking hiding in a sewer for 4 years. Apparently he didn't go to no ER. He's not dead. He still has
He's been training 4 new Ninja Turtles.
How does he still have the same injuries? That's the thing I don't understand. In 4 years, either you're healing or you're dying.
Well, I don't know if they're broken bones and he's never casted them properly or like never.
Rob, it's 4 years. Okay. Anyways, so what ends up happening is this is really like a character study on a young man who lives in Haddonfield, and he is responsible for the accidental death of a child that he's babysitting. And really what this is a look at his descent into being a psychopath. And that story runs alongside parallel the reintroduction of Michael Myers back into life in Haddonfield. And what happens is, for lack of a better idea, that these two fuckers partner up.
Mm-hmm.
Like Myers works alone, man. This is not.
Yeah, but he's decrepit now. He's like a hobbling old version of himself. He's like, he's like future Batman training like Robin into being the new Batman.
Essentially, that this movie kind of, vacillates between Myers as kind of the alpha, the type A dog, and then him, having Corey, that is the name of the character. I don't know if training, helping, he's certainly
inspiring.
He's certainly allowing him to live. And these two storylines kind of, walk along each side of each other. Mm-hmm. I'm just not sure that just saying it out loud and just being like, this is the way the Halloween trilogy end was odd. You like this though, right?
Okay. So I don't know if I liked this
movie. Let's break it down as to what happens.
So there's things I do like about it. There's things I think are kind of dumb. So Corey is the, like you said, a character study, and he gets romantically tied to Allison, who is the granddaughter of Laurie. And the weird thing about this movie is it starts off with Laurie has now like let go. She's now living in a normal house. She's feeling much relieved. She's writing a book about her whole ordeal. She's kind of like hippie mom now to Allison, who doesn't have a mom. So they're living together.
Which is a weird arc from how she was before.
I agree. That's a big jump.
Huge jump, Rob. Huge jump. She's like a drug addict, alcoholic, and like you know, dealing with addiction issues, and she's fortified her home to like no end. And now all of a sudden, wouldn't you be?
She's like putting up Halloween decorations and shit.
Yeah, like she's like she's basically subscribed to, if he comes and gets me, it's like, it's just how it's going to be. You know what I mean? Like she's in that kind of mind state.
And it feels to me unearned because, of course, after the last movie, we know Michael's probably still alive. We know, or we know that he got away. And for Laurie, that should be enough to keep her paranoia at full peak, you know, levels all the time. It makes no sense that she would suddenly just be like, eh, he probably died later on that night in the sewer, you know, lonely by himself. It's like, no, Laurie, you know good and well that whenever you don't see Michael die, he's not dead. So anyway, she somehow has gone through this radical change. But Allison meets Corey. And at the time, Corey is really just a misunderstood guy who had this like bad thing happen to him. But he gets picked on by the local teenage crew, which is like the fucking weakest bully crew I've ever seen in my life. You got a fucking 5'7" like football quarterback or whatever the fuck he's supposed to be. This kid, when you do the wide shot, take a look. This kid is short. He's like 120 pounds at the most. There's a fucking raver in his crew who like maybe
he's got the Tennessee mud flap. He's got the Sholo.
He's got a girl. There's a girl in his bully gang who is, what is it? She's wearing the band outfit.
I was going to say, why is the trombone player in the crew? Like,
like band camp all of a sudden turned evil. Right. And like these guys try to pick on him and like,
oh, there's the other girl. There's the normal one. She's the moral.
Well, she's the one who's trying to tell them like, guys, back off, leave him alone. But you know, she's got to get done eventually too. But Corey like takes so much shit from these guys. And you're like, Corey is like, his arms are twice as big as all these guys.
6 inches taller than all of them.
I don't know if he's that tall actually, but he's definitely thick. Like, he's like 23, right? In this movie, he's post high school. They're in high school. He's got like years on them in terms of like, you know, body muscle. So I don't think he would have, and he's like, maybe he's supposed to be the nerdy guy and that's why he doesn't like physical violence. But at the same time, he looks like a pretty tough guy. He works on cars all day.
Yeah.
He obviously lifts things and like, you know, doesn't mind getting dirty. Like, I don't think he'd have a problem beating the shit out of all four of them. Anyway, he's getting picked on by this guy. And eventually it's what they do to him that sort of slowly turns him, because they flip him over a bridge, which, by the way, in that scene, I thought he was going to throw one of them off, but it actually makes more sense that it doesn't happen that way. Cause
yeah, did that
they need to initiate him into darkness, right?
Yeah. Did that not escalate quickly? Like, oh, yeah. Threw him over a fucking bridge.
Yeah. Yeah. And also it's the quarterback who does it. I'm like, that kid can't even lift that guy. Like, what are you talking about? Anyway, Corey lands on the ground and gets dragged into a dark hole.
Yeah.
By Michael Myers, where Michael somehow decides to keep him alive.
Yeah.
And when he comes out, he's like sort of been given Michael energy.
What did you make of that when he pulls them close and they look each other in the eye? What did you think?
Because have they already said it yet? This happens throughout the movie where they keep talking about Corey's eyes. If when you look into his eyes,
yeah, they're black.
Or you can see that there's
evil that comes in there. Later when the dad of the child that he was babysitting that died was talking and. You know, talked about, you know, I thought there was still some redemption in Corey, but then I pulled up alongside him on the side of the road and I looked into his eyes and there was nothing.
Like, but it's all but I thought Laurie had said it once before that, but even so, the point is, did Michael either identify and see himself in Corey, or did he transfer something into him through his magic stare, his magic trance stare?
If you're on board with the idea that Michael and Laurie are going to be secondary characters in the final trilogy of the Halloween franchise. Mm-hmm. And you're on board with this like American Psycho style character study of a new character and his ascension into becoming a psychopath and a killer and a descent into madness. Mm-hmm. Then that's an interesting talking point where if you want to, you know, you'd have to think about what, you know, you could examine the relationship between Michael Myers and Corey. I'm just not sure I ever got there. And I think probably other fans didn't get there either, man.
Yeah, like, does enough actually happen? Because then the next time, we'll go, here's the one thing, though. The next time they meet, it's when Corey has tricked the cop who was hitting on Allison.
Oh, my God.
And brings him into the tunnel. And Michael pulls out his knife. And Corey, laying on his back, holds the cop down, pulls his arms back, spreads his legs open for him so that Michael could just pound at him a little bit. Like, if you're not detecting the pornographic imagery of this murder scene, it is so weird to me. I'm like, oh, it's like a mom teaches like it's a type of porn I've seen before.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure.
So
Michael gets to kill the cop because Corey's holding him down, and it's very sexualized.
It is.
And this sort of teaches Corey what it's like to kill. Although he hasn't done it himself yet, he's like now experienced the death, and he's like powered up. And you actually see Michael like sort of like get erect, his body.
He actually but here's the thing. It's the gratification of it.
Yeah, but he also reinvigorates himself. He goes from barely able to walk to like all of a sudden he's fully standing up again. Is, you know, the tall, huge body that is Michael Myers becomes more obvious again, where you're like, oh yeah, that's Michael. Because Michael was kind of like, you know, hobbling around before this point.
It's funny. Listen to you talk about it. I feel like this movie almost would have been better as a standalone film when you were actually going to take a look at the end of Myers' run and the new run of another. But
well, that's what I thought this was. See, yeah, I thought like this was going to do a transfer. I thought this was going to be a transfer of the franchise where Michael would possibly die at the end, and maybe Laurie would too, but there would be a new killer who now has donned the mask of Michael. And, you know, that sort of idea that maybe the mask itself has a supernatural power that kind of, like Jim Carrey, turns you into the mask, and now you're the new bad guy.
Smoking!
Wait, can I ask you a question at this point? Like,
yeah.
Until the murder of the cop, that's where we start to realize, oh, well, that's Michael Myers, right? I actually started to wonder if Michael Myers was going to be dead in this movie for a long time.
And I thought the same thing.
I thought the guy in the sewer wearing Michael's mask might be just another homeless man because of the way that he kind of like limbered around. He wasn't very strong. He looked like he was kind of broken down.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, he found Michael Myers' body, took his mask, and Corey's actually worshiping like a false idol. He doesn't realize that this isn't actually Michael Myers. This is just some dude who's been living down there.
I thought something a little bit different. I thought that Corey and Myers were positioned in this way together and somehow on this like equal footing. I thought Myers would be offed, as sometimes you see the characters are some of those main characters are killed like halfway through the movie. And then the runway is cleared for Corey to kind of ascend to this position for that transfer to be done. So, and that's one of the things that I think the director probably struggled with, is that he wasn't ready to do that because this was the Halloween trilogy. Michael, there needed to be closure on that end. But I think that he just ran out of steam with Michael as the apex predator and killer and had to come up with another idea, for lack of a better word.
But you know what he could have done? I mean, this would have sucked too, but people wouldn't have liked this either. But he could have had Corey discover that the Michael Myers was just a homeless guy. And that's when he decides, then I'm going to be the new Michael. If this guy is just some guy, I'll take the mask and I'll be the new Michael. And the end of the movie, Corey gets got, or, you know, he gets defeated. Evil is defeated. And, you know, Laurie just has this weird moment where she looks over his shoulder and there's the shape, you know, standing by a tree somewhere in the background, a guy without a mask. And you're like, oh, fuck, Michael is still alive, but he's not going to come back to the fourth movie. So it would have been a weird way to just push him out of the whole film while teasing that he kind of had something to do with it, but wasn't really there. But instead, I think they did need, like you said, the movie was supposed to be about the closure between him and Laurie and to finish the trilogy. This second story, it's almost like they're trying to kickstart another set of movies.
Yeah.
And then they're realizing, well, actually, we can't do that anyway because we don't have the contract. And we got to finish off this Michael Myers story anyway. So let's just kind of like put the two together at the same time. The one thing I want to mention too, Jamie, is that like Corey's descent to me accelerates at times a bit too quickly.
Yes.
And I wish it had been slightly more gradual. And the one thing I really would have liked to have seen happen, because they start hinting at it in this film and then they don't go all the way. Allison and him are in love and they're starting to fall for each other. And
yeah, the drive scene.
Yeah. And there's this whole scene where they have this like 80s synth pop soundtrack. They're riding on the motorcycle together. You know, it's like you think it's the guy from Drive and Irene hanging out. And like I was kind of taken by it. I was like, yeah, let's do this. Let's like, what if Allison and him have this super hot, like that's actually what was missing, was a super hot fuck, like sex scene.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that would have upped the ante about how far their relationship had gone. Cause we see that they slept together, but it's like they go upstairs and it's a sweet little moment that we don't see anything. And then they see them in the morning. I was like, no, make it like a passionate animal sex scene where it's like, they're both like awakened with this like energy that they didn't have before.
Does she like it gentle or rough? bomb.
And then tease the idea that maybe Allison's getting brought over to the dark side. And this is like the beginning of Star Wars. My comparison to that end of that second Star Wars movie in the remakes in the, you know, what is it, 7, 8, 9? There's this moment where you think that Rey and Kylo Ren are actually going to hook up and then, like, you know, run the Empire as new Jedis with balance. And maybe he'll be too hard-fisted, but she'll balance him out. It'll all work out. And I was like, that's an interesting idea that they have never, you know, bothered to try to explore, because it doesn't work with the whole good meets evil thing. Like, you want good and evil to be clearly defined.
Yep.
But I started to think, man, what if they get into the gray? What if they really dive into the gray on this and let us start to wonder, like, what if this becomes a duo? What if Allison becomes a killer?
I actually really like that idea. Go all the way. Go all the way. You know what I mean? Bring in Allison. I think that's a great idea.
And that drives to my other point. It's just like, you know, she essentially, Allison is positioned to be an antagonist to Lori, because Lori introduces the two of them together, but then decides, oh, that kid Corey's got something odd about him. She investigates Corey. She follows him around. Yeah. She finds him sleeping in the house that murdered the kid, which is where we have one of those big jumps where I felt like that was an unearned sort of jump to start descending him into madness right after his mom kissed him on the lips, which I thought was also kind of heavy handed.
Is that before or after he kills his mom?
It's before he kills his mom. It's after she kisses him. He wakes up the next morning and he's sleeping on the floor where the kid fell in that abandoned house. But Lori's sitting there waiting for him like fucking Kung Fu master, like Batman coming in the window. And then she slips out through the window again too, by the way, just like Batman, which is so weird to me. But then Allison is positioned just to be the antagonist to Lori in that sense, where she's having this battle and she's like, no, you have to believe me. He's a good guy. I know him the way no one else does. And Lori's like, no, you got to believe me. I have all this weird intuition about him. And then she never mentions, I found him sleeping on the floor where he killed a kid.
Blood stain.
Yeah. Like, it's a bit weird, but never brings that up. And then what I'm saying is, you would thought the way the movie was going that Allison is going to have to kill Corey. Like, she's going to learn he's a psycho and have to defend herself and then kill him. Instead, Lori is there for the battle with Corey. Corey offs himself to make Allison believe that Lori did it.
Yeah.
And then Michael shows up again to have the big final conclusion. Now, Michael's had a few kills along the way. We have seen him do another wall stabbing of the sexy nurse. And that's another scene that's seems weirdly developed, because Corey is hunting that doctor and that nurse because he's giving a promotion away that should have gone to Allison.
Yes.
But Allison never finds out that they got killed. We never hear Allison I wish someone would do something. I really hate that nurse or something, to make Corey say to himself, oh, you hate her, eh? Well, I'll go get her then. Like, it's all just all that happens off camera. We have no, like, it just seems like a storytelling. We're missing a couple little threads to make that scene make more sense.
Yep.
Like, my brain can put it together because I see why it's there, but they didn't do it in the movie. It's just because I know how these movies work that I'm like, oh, I see. He's getting revenge for Allison's sake here. But that never kicks back to her so that she can get, that's weird. Why would somebody kill them? Right? And so she never has those doubt flags raised, which usually a movie like this would do, so that at the end she can decide for herself to, you know, save herself from this guy. So a lot of little like things there that I thought didn't kind of work with Corey's development, how Allison's character didn't seem to have a climax that mattered. Instead, it comes back to Lori and the big showdown and the big battle in the house with Michael Myers.
Listen, the movie's clumsy in those ways, Rob, because the director and those behind the film were trying to do something that was vastly different from the original ideas and just how the original film, the 2018 film, followed very carefully, you know, very similarly to how the original was done. And then again, it was like super divergent in terms of the ideas they brought into it. But the problem is, and like you said, those little pieces that were done, like, I thought it was clumsy, and I wasn't really invested. I'm not even sure I really cared much about Corey as a character anyways. Like, I'm not sure that I bought his madness. I'm not sure. Maybe I just wasn't ready for it. And my expectation in terms of what was delivered to me was like really different, but I'm not sure it hit me as hard as I wanted.
So Jamie, you still get your big final showdown between Lori and Michael. So what did you think about that?
I thought it was fitting that the two of them were on screen together to finish off the franchise. And I think it would have been an absolute abomination if it hadn't happened. But to be honest with you, it's pretty meek.
Really?
Michael, at this point, injured. He's injured through the whole film, so he's not really putting up much of a fight. In fact, with a little bit of help, he has his hand stabbed down to the breadboard, and he's just basically there splayed out, and Laurie is kind of toying with him a little bit. And, you know, she slits his throat, and she stabs him in the side, and he's bleeding out. And, you know, like, it's an the one thing that I did like is the intimacy of the killing at the end, because they have shared so much pain together, and they have been good versus evil for so long, and all the fans, forget about these new sequels, just all the films. So to me, that was, and the filmmaking is pretty cool, and like the way it looks is great. I thought the intimacy was good. I felt that I was in the moment, and then when the two blood-soaked hands sort of just brush fingers against each other, you know, that's for the fans. That's for the conclusion of the film.
It's like, better than a kiss.
It is better than a kiss, but unfortunately, well, not unfortunately, but for Michael, fuck, they had other plans for his body, man.
He sent him to the meat grinder.
Oh my God, man. That was like, fuck, like you said, that
parade was him through town.
Nuts.
Yeah.
His actions and just this cloud that's been just hanging over Haddonfield, you know what I mean? You needed to exorcise this demon in a seriously meaningful way. So they put this motherfucker in not a meat grinder, Rob. This is like a steel grinder. Like, yeah. And you actually see it. Like his body go in there and his brain like explode. And then they're just like, one of the cops like, no, we can't do this. And it's like, it's got to be done this way. Like we got to do it.
Yeah.
Michael's got, and like, it's just, it felt very, well, it's very processional.
No tombstone.
No, yeah, no fucking taxpayer money here. And they just put him in there and then
they grape juice and pour a glass for everyone and pass like it around.
It was like really graphic. Did you not find it like?
Yeah, I was a little shocked by it.
Yeah, I thought maybe that they would dial it back a little bit. And because the movie, when you go to look for like the protege psychopath, you're looking for a little bit of nuance, but like, no, it was very graphic and it was intentional and it was meant to just boom, put a stamp on the end. This is it.
Now, the stamp on the end is don't fear the Reaper.
Don't fear the Reaper, man.
A little more cowbell.
That's another thing. I didn't like the color of the font in this film. Okay.
All right.
Why? Light blue. Anyways, so we have gone through Halloween Kills, you know what I mean? Evil Dies Tonight, Incompetent Police. And then we've gone to Halloween Ends with the protege psychopath, Michael Myers, Batman and Robin, the one thing I'll just say, Rob, where in your mind did you ever think somebody that would just be pure evil, ever consider the ideas of collaboration?
Well, I guess you can.
Rob, think about the most evil person.
I assumed there'd be a backstab. I mean, I 100% assumed Michael would backstab Corey at some point.
Or Corey backstab Michael. Man, somebody's got to go, man. Both of them can't be, you know what I mean? You can't be the Don.
Yeah.
Like you can't be a top of the hill. Somebody's got to go.
That's what I'm saying. This pattern, Star Wars, pretty precisely here. Like you can't have the Emperor and Darth Vader. One of them's got to go. So
that's, are you saying that Halloween, are you saying Green stole Star Wars playbook?
A little bit.
Fuck you, Green.
No, I mean, a lot of these movies have a similar pattern, but
no, for sure.
Let's wrap this up, James.
Yeah, that was fun. Okay, so let's do the Running Scared Award.
I'm gonna make a run for it.
Run, bitch! Run!
Who ran the most?
Who got the most exercise in the Halloween trilogy?
It
can't be Michael Myers. He just walks. Yeah, I know he does a lot of heavy lifting. Like, I'll give him, like, he's probably getting swole. But I don't know. Who do you think actually got the most, like, steps in, went out and did a good run?
Oh, I got one. You can't take it.
All right. You do yours first then.
Okay.
All right, Jamie. I'm going to say it can't be Michael Myers, but I'll leave it up to you. Who do you think got the most exercise?
I'm going to come in with Officer Hawkins. And I'm going to tell you why.
It's the hospital where the movies is in a bed the whole time.
He's fucking in Halloween. You know, the funniest thing in Halloween Ends is he's in the fucking meat aisle with his, it's 5 years later after the 40 years later. He's like, he's 85 years old. He's got his walker. He comes and sees Laurie. It's like, reminds me from, like Driving Miss Daisy. Hello, Miss Daisy. He just comes up and he's so he seems so old. And maybe because that's supposed to be the stress of it. But anyways, from the flashback, that guy was running through the alleys. That guy's shooting up his partner. He's, you know what I mean? He's working up a sweat up in the house. He comes back. He gets Myers. He gets the collar like Serpico. And then in the next movie, he's on the hot trail to Myers. He takes a scalpel in the neck. Still recovers from that. You know, he lies in a bed, but he's working hard to, working up a sweat in his recovery. And then in the last movie, he's still on the beat. He's older. He's,
you always give it to the guy on the beat.
He's still on the beat. Guys in Sobeys getting his meat, but he comes and sees Laurie. He's with her. You know, that guy's moving. He's doing his errands. He's doing his groceries. It's going Officer Hawkins, Rob.
Wow, that is off the board. I'm going to give it to Corey. Corey seems like he's always going somewhere fast. He's not paying attention to traffic. He almost gets hit by a car like two or three times because he's got to go somewhere and he doesn't look at the traffic. He just tries to cross. He's on a bicycle at the beginning of the movie. You know, he gets an upgrade later, but like he starts off on foot quite a bit. And then when he goes on his psycho rampage, like he's got a lot of distance to cover, this guy. He's got the radio station. He's at the junkyard. He's at the house. I think this guy gets the reps in. And, you know, he also does a lot of tunnel crawling, going through sewers. Yeah, I think that's like a – it was like one of those Tough Mudder kind of things.
Tough Mudder is like one of those like, oh, yeah, like Gladiator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me Tough Muds.
Oh, that's good. Actually good. Yeah, that's like, yeah, exactly. Like Gladiator basic training. Yeah, I like that.
All right, Jane, it's time to review the Halloween trilogy.
Okay, this is like a 2-hour-long pod. So I'm just going to make my review. I'm going to make my review really, really short. I think that David Gordon Green breathed fresh air, breathed the spirit into this new trilogy, at least at the beginning. And if he accomplished one thing, he reinvigorated Myers in his true evil form. The movies look really slick. They are filmed well. I enjoyed, for the most part, even though I didn't love everything that I was watching, I enjoyed what was presented in front of me in terms of like this, how it was stylized. I think that in each film, there are still really creepy scenes where Myers is at his best, the park scene and Halloween Kills, you know, the light bulb scene. I do really appreciate that. I just think that we've spoken before about how sometimes movies can devolve into a series, and you love this term, and I use it now, these vignettes, these whole, their own stories kind of cobbled together or put together. And to me, while I can see how it's threaded together as three films, the first, second, and third installment in this trilogy to me feel very different and really their own spirit and their own films. And I'm not sure they entirely work together. And my only critique is that for large portions of the second and third film, and or Laurie and Myers are relegated to secondary characters in their own franchise. So I'm not sure that if I'm seeing that, if the director is really executing what needs to happen. But that's my subjective opinion on it. I am going to give the trilogy as a whole 3 out of 5 footsteps.
Oh, okay. So you kind of, if you had to break it down in 3 movies, would you have a different rating for each one? Or are we not going to do that?
I'm not going to break it down into 3 movies.
Are you like a 4-3-3 or 4-2-2?
Yeah, if I was going to actually break it down to tiers, I enjoyed the first film the most. I enjoyed the third film the second most, and I enjoyed the second film the least.
Wow. Yeah, I have a hard time reviewing this one because I kind of have opposite feeling of you. Like, I don't know if these were great films, but I definitely feel like Halloween Kills and Halloween Ends have stories that my brain seems to latch onto. Like, I can kind of follow them more. I remember them better. And maybe that's just because I watched it in order. But, like, Halloween to me was sort of like a spoonful of something I'd had before. It was serviceable and it was great. It was good. It just wasn't like that memorable. The thing that I remember the most, obviously, is the big final scene in the safe house. And I think that was, so I guess what I'm driving to here is that, like, this is a strange trilogy. Like, it's a very weird set of three kind of unique stories. Michael and Laurie are the thread, but they are kind of very different stories. And like you said, they kind of take a backseat at different times. Laurie takes a backseat in number two and Michael takes a backseat in number three. And if you look at it, like, okay, what's each one about? I should have used this in my one line challenge, but I did write down sort of one line about each of the three movies. Cause I was trying to figure out, like, well, what's the arc on this whole trilogy? Number one, Halloween, a serial killer returns to strike terror again, but this time his former victim is fucking Rambo. That was cool to me. It was like, okay, the victim this time, or the person who was the victim in the first movie, has now armed themselves to the teeth and is ready to face Michael. Here's the difference, though. To me, that movie could have been more if we saw Laurie being more proactive and actually, like, driving around hunting Michael. Like, maybe she starts stalking him. Like, the roles reverse a little bit. And maybe she commits some errors that, like, put her family in danger. I just feel like even though she was armed to the teeth and ready, her readiness was all like a passive trap. She was waiting for Michael to come to her house. And that was her whole plan, I guess. But that seems a bit convenient for the plot, too. You know what I mean? Like, the house was the bear trap that she had set for Michael. Anyway, the second movie, the town's in bedlam. Michael's like this one-man tornado sending everyone to the ER, and they decide to take matters into their own hands and strike back. That made sense to me. And as much as and as crazy as the film got, like, I understood why it went that way, and I just thought it was a really interesting change. Like, it was not what I expected this film to be about. And the third one, you got Corey, who I'm calling Kylo Ren, is turned to the dark side, but he loves Rey, who's Allison, a girl trained in the Jedi arts of killing serial killers. But unfortunately, only grandma has a serial killer radar. And if you think about the story that way, you're like, yeah, that's a weird story. Why is the story between Corey and Allison the center when it's not the center of the movie at all? Like, it's more important that Laurie and Michael finalize their standoff over all these years. And the battleground is sort of like Michael's adopted son is trying to date her granddaughter. and the parallel is supposed to be there, right? Like, that, like, Corey is sort of son of Michael. So it's kind of it is a discombobulated story, and it's kind of hard to understand it. It doesn't have the smooth symmetry that you're kind of looking for, especially on a three movie arc where you're looking for this final standoff, final battleground between Michael and Laurie. So it's confusing. And I think we always struggle when we're a little confused. So overall, do I find these entertaining? I found Halloween kind of forgettable. I found Halloween Kills and Halloween Ends less forgettable, but not necessarily good. So I'm going to come in with this trilogy. They're all like threes or under if I was to break them down individually. So I'm going to give this trilogy like a 2.5 out of 5.
Wow. Rob Lendrum strikes. Shots fired.
Okay. I just think entertainment value is going to be different for every person, though. Like,
for sure.
Like I said, I kind of like 2 and 3 only because I felt more entertained, but at the same time, I thought they were dumber movies. Whereas one was solid, but just didn't entertain me.
Gotcha. Okay, let's wrap this up. One of the things is we have a new show. We have a new show on Patreon. We are calling it The Cool Down. And the premise of The Cool Down is to talk about the previous episode, talk about the highlights, the lowlights, and everything in between, things we missed, things that we thought were really funny and want to talk about again, and also give a chance to do some giveaways, do some polls, do some prizes, maybe even have some people call in. So that is just going to be a show exclusive to our Patreon members, and we've actually had some more Patreon subscribers recently, so that's fantastic. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Running Scared.
The Running Scared podcast is written and produced by Robert Lendrum and Jamie Roberts, with original music by Jamie Roberts. This episode edited by Robert Lendrum. Tune in for another horror movie review or jogcast on the next episode of Running Scared.